The 43rd edition of golf's greatest team event is only 1 year away now, ladies and gentlemen, and it will be played September 25 to 27 in 2020. So let's get to it and meet the captains. First, he is a three-time major champion and has won 15 times on the European Tour and on 15 other occasions around the world. Please welcome, from Dublin, Ireland, Padraig Harrington. Next, he is a 12-time winner on the PGA Tour and 5-time winner on the PGA Tour Champions, including 2 majors. Please welcome, from Madison, Wisconsin, Steve Stricker. Captain Harrington, let's go ahead and begin with you. Good early morning, and welcome to Whistling Straits here in Kohler, Wisconsin. The last time these two teams gathered, it was almost exactly 1 year ago today, just outside Paris at Le Golf National, where Europe beat Team USA 17.5 to 10.5. In a nutshell, what worked, and can you talk about the challenges a captain might face playing an away match versus a home match?
So you really want me to give you all the answers of what worked?
Did we have about plenty of time for that?
You know, we had a good team. There's no doubt about it. Thomas was a good captain. He was blessed with probably one of the best teams we've had in terms of world rankings. There was a lot of quality in the team. They came together very well. Obviously, we lost on Friday morning 3-1, which was a big setback to us. But we had some nice balance in that team. We stuck to our guns and we came through on Friday afternoon, which was huge for our team. You know, that Friday afternoon session, obviously, you know, it's tough to lose one session 3-1, but to come back in the afternoon just instilled the confidence to go on with the plan. I think Paris National no doubt suited the European game, suited our style of play. So, yeah, you know, after getting the advantage back, home advantage, it carried on from there. As you can see, I'm really trying to avoid anything that actually gives away what exactly happened behind the scenes. But, yeah, it was, I've got to say, you know, it was a really quality team.
And home match versus an away match?
Oh, I think there's a substantial difference. It's, I would advocate even too much of a difference between home and away. Clearly, in Europe, we get to set the golf course up, and we set it up every way we can to suit our players. And in the States, we've seen that as well, you know, where the golf courses are set up to be most advantageous for the home team. I think it's obviously not going to happen probably in my lifetime, but 40, 50 years down the road when the Ryder Cup is still going along, it'll probably be best to have a neutral setup where there is no setting up a golf course as we did in Europe, so that it was very tight off the tee, and it made it a real difficult, you know, where par was a good score, whereas if you went back to Hazeltine, it was more of a birdie fest, which, you know, suited the statisticians have got involved and tell us what suits each team. So, yeah, possibly down the road, it's going to be more of a neutral setup. Thankfully, here at Whistling Straits, this is a much more natural golf course. So I'm interested to see down the road what Steve has in store, but it doesn't look like you can do a lot with this golf course. It's just as much as it was obviously designed and built there, it looks like it's just in a natural setting all its life, and it's going to present its way. Even the weather could be very changeable the week of the Ryder Cup next year. So in many ways, this is a golf course that is just going to test the players on its own merits.
Got it. Captain Stricker, the U.S. team didn't get the results you wanted in Paris. And on top of that, the U.S. has only won 3 of the last 10 Ryder Cups. Does it concern you that history really isn't on your side?
Yeah, it does concern us. But to Padraig's point there, they had a great team this last time in Paris. They outplayed us. We had a difficult time with the golf course. And yeah, you know, the last few Ryder Cups haven't gone really the way that we have liked, but, you know, for us, it's all about, you know, for me anyways, it's about moving forward, and this next team is probably going to be the first time these 12 individuals, you know, we'll probably have some new guys on the team. It'll be the first time these 12 individuals will be together. So it's, you know, for me, it's about moving forward, learning from the past a little bit, taking some of the things that we haven't done so well in, and then trying to apply that to this next time and next year. And it's about playing better. You know, bottom line is they played great and they outplayed us, and you know, we're going to have to come and be ready and make the putts that we need to and hit the key shots down the stretch that we need to hit to come out on top.
Very good. Padraig, you've played on 6 Ryder Cup teams and you were a vice captain 3 times. Wearing your vice captain cap, what were you able to take away from Paris and from Thomas's captaincy?
You learn a lot more as a vice captain than you do as a player. A player, it's startling how, I suppose, insular we are as players. We it's all about getting your own game ready, doing what you need to do. And as professional golfers, we're self-managed, so it really is all about us as we go along. But when you become a vice captain, you start seeing a lot more, and because of that, you obviously clearly learn a lot more what's the demands of the players and how to fit them together and manage all the different personalities in a team. So yeah, the vice captains, for me, that's where you learn the most. It's nice to be in a player and all that, but it's, and I suppose when you're a player, you see different styles of captaincy that you like and you don't like. And I had 6 different captains, and they all had different. I had a couple of captains who were very much arm around the shoulder, you know, encouraging you and believing in you. I remember with Bernard Langer, which he sat there at the evening meeting after the first day's play, and his nearly the first words out of his at the meeting was, and it was at a boardroom table as well, and he turns around and says, "Now, we'll have nobody laying up into the hazard on number 5 tomorrow." I was the only one who had laid up into the hazard that day. So yeah, Bernard was, and Bernard would be on the tees telling you what clubs to hit into the par 3s and things like that. So there's so many different styles of captaincy. You do see that, and I don't believe I'm going to be one or the other. I hopefully would be a mixture of most. But then as vice captain, you tend to learn a lot about the tactics that go in behind that. And it is difficult. Steve would know this from being there as well. It's incredibly difficult to put a team out at, you know, mid-morning, well, late morning on Friday, when the guys have only played maybe 14 holes of golf, and you have to put a team out for the afternoon, and sometimes you put players out who end up losing their morning match, and sometimes you drop players who've won the morning match, and clearly you get second-guessed on your team selection. But, you know, oftentimes people don't realise those teams have to be sided, and there's so many factors that go into it that literally being the vice-captain, you do get to sit there and be part of that decision-making. And that's really what I believe that's going to help me the most as being a captain.
Thank you. Similarly, Steve, you are a 3-time Ryder Cupper and a 3-time vice captain. Like Padraig, you've seen what it looks like wearing a vice captain's cap as a winner and a loser. Is there a big difference between the captaincy and the vice captaincy in your mind?
Yeah, I think Padraig nailed it all on the head. You learn a lot. You know, let's just put it that way. You get the behind the scenes look at what it takes to lead a team, and you watch these captains, and you pick out your favorite things or your least favorite things about every captain, and you see what works with players, and it kind of shapes you as a captain, I think. And yeah, you learn a lot, and you learn how much there is and what goes into it, and it's much easier being a player, because you can just worry about yourself, worry about your game, and get ready for the team and get ready for your partner. But when it becomes time to make some of these decisions, like you said, when you got to put a team out in the afternoon, you know, you can see all the assistant captains and the captains, you know, literally running to a corner to try to figure it out, to try to make sure that you're going to do the right thing. So it's an interesting job. It's a fun job. And you know, we look forward to it, but you do, you learn a lot as you go along.
Padraig, you played in all 3 PGA championships here at Whistling Straits, so you're very familiar with this venue. Can you talk about what you think it might shape up as a Ryder Cup venue?
I think it'd be a great venue for the Ryder Cup. I think it's a dramatic golf course. You know, we need that in the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup's probably the most exciting golf event, you know, in the game. One of the biggest sporting events, but certainly the most exciting in golf. And, you know, you need a dramatic golf course that lends itself to spectacular play as well as some disastrous play. You know, that's what match play is about. And this is the three PGAs I played. What mostly I remember is the variability of the golf course. Weather-wise, you know, a change of direction of wind can just, you know, massively change how a hole plays. Moving a tee box forward or back can change the whole character of holes. So, yeah, it's an ideal match play golf course. I think people will enjoy watching match play on this course. I think it really does lend itself to that exciting play.
Got it. Steve, Americans are 0-for-3 at PGA Championships at Whistling Straits. Do the whispers about Whistling Straits favoring the European team cause you any concern at all?
you're sure bringing up a lot of negatives here, Julius. But it concerns us when we look out. And I don't know if you brought this weather today or what, but hopefully we have nice sunny 75-degree days next year at this time. When you look out here, it has the feel of, does it not, over there in Ireland?
Looks like an Irish day out there. Yeah.
But the whole setting, you know, next to Lake Michigan, it looks like we could be overseas somewhere for sure, but...
It looks like an Irish summer's day out there.
But it's, it concerns us, and, you know, it's a great venue. We're going to have an unbelievable support crowd here. The atmosphere should be much like Hazeltine, or even more so. The Wisconsin people, you know, from what I understand, are very excited to have this event here. It's going to be an exciting time here, and you know, the course is beautiful. It's one of our best courses in the state of Wisconsin, and to have the Kohler people here, Herb's a friend of mine, David and Nina, and just to be able to play it here is really a special treat for all of us. And the state is going to show up big time, and we're going to have the crowd on our side. So hopefully that'll deter from what it really looks like, out there as far as a Irish setting. But we're looking forward to it.
Good deal. Thank you. Padraig, take a look at this slide, which reflects European-born winners over the last year. Some names are familiar to us, some are not, but could you take a look at that and tell us what brings a smile to your face?
Shane Lowry, for sure. Look, clearly we've a nice array of players winning there. There's some young players coming through, and I think Steve said it about his own team. There does feel like there's a changing of the guard coming in some ways. There's a lot of young players that I have to get to know coming through. I do like the fact on the right-hand side of the slide we have a solid base there that to work off, and you expect most of those guys to be in the team. But there will be, you know, 3 or 4, 5 rookies in the team, new guys, fresh faces. That's just the world of golf, what's coming through. And, you know, as I always say, the 9 guys who qualified for my team, it doesn't matter who they are. If they've qualified, they've played well enough to be there. They deserve to be there. They're the 9 best form informed players, and we can work around those 9 guys. They're the ones I want in the team. So it doesn't really matter until you get those 9 guys. They are going to be the 9 best players we have at that stage. So, you know, you would like to fill it with the old experienced guys there on the right-hand side, but you're comfortable with the younger guys also coming into the team.
So speaking of your team, you're only 2 weeks into the European points standings, as you can see on this next screen popping up here. Any thoughts, any surprises as you look at this?
The surprises I'm looking at, and I have looked at it. You know, I told myself, just don't look at the points and wins. Like, it's a full year away. And as vice captain, again, the experience you get as vice captain, you start to get involved in looking at players and what the captain is feeling. And during the course of the last 3 months, you pick a new team every week if you're looking at it. So this is very early doors. Yes, I have looked at it. I said I wouldn't, and I will continue to look at it, and people will continue to remind me of it. But, you know, as I said, if any of these players, and, you know, like Victor Perez there is a young guy just starting off, he's right up there. If he qualifies, if he holds on to that position for the next 12 months, he really deserves to be there. That's going to be a quality performance because the pressure is on him. So I'm happy with any rookie who makes it into my team. They, you know, they're the ones, especially at this stage, if they do it for a full year, it means they have the experience of handling the pressure, and you're going to be looking forward to that type of player making the team. But the fact of the matter is, when you know, we have statisticians and they tell us who's got what chance of making the team, and it's amazing. It's a pretty slim chance for most people in the end of the day, because only 9 people qualify automatically. So even for good players, it's, you know, for a lot of good players, it's down to, you know, maybe a 1 in 20 chance, a 1 in 10 chance of making the team. So this will change over time, but I'm comfortable with a few rookies making my team for sure.
Thank you. Steve, same question. As you can see, here's a list of winners over the past year from U.S.-born players. I'm kind of guessing you like the way the majors played out this year.
Yeah. You know, again, it's so early in the deal. We're a year away, you know, 11 months away from making our picks, and the guys finalized on the team. And but, yeah, you got some great younger players that have starting to prove themselves, like a Patrick Cantlay, and, you know, watching Cameron Champ do what he did this last week was really impressive down the stretch, that last hole. And and we're going to have the mainstays, I'm sure, as well. You know, the Dustin Johnsons, the Koepka, you know, Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, you know, who's been playing really well. So, again, you just keep looking at it. You know, you look at it. I get those emails from you on a weekly basis to show me the point system and how everybody's playing. And